Well, hello everybody, and welcome to the Weirdly Cosmic podcast. And this is one of my Tea with Louise interviews. And I'm really honored and excited today to talk to the wonderful Stephen Forrest, who apparently Rob Bresney described you as what did he describe you as? The most brilliant astrologer alive.
I hope he hasn't repented of that.
Well, I tend to agree with him, to be honest. Stephen Forrest is just one of the kind. I'm not going to get into that, but kind of he's one of the premier evolutionary astrologers. We're not going to get into who started evolutionary astrology. I think you've spoken about that in many interviews. But as an author myself, I wanted to talk to Stephen about authoring, writing, the process, publishing. And he's the author of several bestsellers, including The Inner Sky, Changing Sky, The Book of Pluto, Night Speaks, Yesterday's Sky, Book of the Moon, Book of Neptune. And the latest books are all on the elements, right? You've got the Book of Water, Fire, Air, and Earth. Are they all out now? I didn't check.
They're all complete now.
So, how many books in total, Stephen?
It sort of depends how you count them. 16 is the short answer. My ex-wife, Jody, and I wrote a book called Skymates for Bantam Books, and later we divided that into two volumes, one basic synastry, the other about the composite chart. So the math gets a little bit strange, but Sweet 16 is about right.
Yeah, and then you've got Measuring the Night, which was
Yeah, with
they
Jeff
were
Green, two volumes of Measuring the Night with Jeffrey Wolf Green.
were they transcripts of talks? It's it
Yeah,
reads
they
very
were kind of heavily reworked transcripts. We Jeff and I did I think it was three different workshops together in kind of a defining evolutionary astrology, basically. We were each practicing it, but we kind of reached critical mass when we worked together and drew a lot of attention. They called us the Pluto Brothers for a while.
I'm lucky enough to have both volumes of Measuring the Night because they're really hard to find now. I
Yeah, they're
just
very
looked on
expensive.
Amazon and
Yeah.
one is $49, one's $200. So
Yeah. Yeah. I
I
saw
paid
the 200 and well, I couldn't afford it.
nothing. So, Stephen, have you always been a writer?
Oh, I suppose I was in the world 6 or 8 months before I began to write, so not always.
Pretty much always then. Now, having written three books myself, I know it's actually kind of hard work writing a whole book. Even if you love writing, which I do, but to kind of organize thoughts and things like that. So, when you started, did you start with The Inner Sky? Was that the
Well,
first thing that you?
that was the first one that actually got published. But where I started back before I did honest work, astrology, I worked for the government for a while. I was actually a writer in my 20s on a big National Institute of Mental Health project, big sociological survey. And I was also doing a lot of the computer stuff way back, the punch card kind of days. And so after hours, in violation of 19 different federal laws, I'm sure, I correlated people's responses to all these sociological questions with their sun signs, because we had their birth dates, and found it's working. Even sun sign astrology wasn't a strong force, but it was a statistically significant force. Like if you walk into a crowded room and some of the people are strangers and some do you know well, do you mostly talk to the people you know well? Who came out number one on that? Cancers, and it was like on and on and on. So I said, this is going to be a million seller. I'm going to be rich. And I quit my job and I wrote a book about all of this, New Evidence for an Old Art, it was called. And it was rejected over and over and over and over again and never got into print. So that was my first book.
Do you still have the tram habit?
Yeah, I do. And it was one of those I was born with a Sun Jupiter conjunction squared by Neptune. So sometimes I'm lucky, but I don't know it. And yes. This is an example of that. I'm so glad that book never got published, mostly because I think it was well written and it was solid statistical science. But I would have been cubbyholed as a statistical science side astrologer. And that's not what I am. That's not who I am. So it was really a blessing that it never got published.
Oh, so tell me a little bit about your writing process, because you are so prolific. I couldn't believe these four element books that you've recently published. They you know, each one is quite, you know, they're not tiny books.
No, in fact, there's a story there. I'd like to circle back to that, but I'll respond to you. This question. Well, we'll jam here, but my writing process, like a lot of writers, it's, you know, coffee in the morning and whiskey at night to get over it, you know, just truth be said. I write long hours, but I do like to get started early. We know the house is quiet and my head is clear because of the coffee. More than once, people have come up to me and said, you know, so how do you do it? Writing a book, that must be hard. And here's my stock answer. I have a serious answer, but here's the one if there's people waiting in line. I'll say, remember high school? Everybody nods their head. And I say, remember term papers? Everybody nods their head. And I say, 100 of them. That's how you write a book. You know, keep going, keep going. Yes. Don't let anything stop you. Don't let anything distract you. Be brutal in your social relationships and all of your moral responsibilities, and just keep writing.
That's very good advice. I've had this idea in my head for my fourth book for quite some time, and I keep procrastinating because you do have to be brutal and say, this is it. I am going to write. Schedule, block off your calendar. Be brutal, as you said, about having coffees and things with friends and stuff.
One of my favorite stories with this is not astrology writing, but writing in general. Peter Benchley, the guy who wrote Jaws, he had a discipline of, I think every day he would write for 4 hours or 6 hours or something like that. He was strict about it. And one day he sits down, nothing is coming. He figured he's got to start this chapter. So he writes the word the, you know, just T-H-E, figuring it's a good bet that's going to be the first word of the first paragraph. He writes the, he sits there for 6 hours, nothing else comes. He finishes the sentence, hell with it, period. But see, he won the battle with his unconscious mind that was trying to rob him of his self-discipline, which is a writer's only friend. After you've written for a while, you've lost all your others.
It's so true. And just for anybody listening, you know, I know my audience is primarily astrology, but you know, this process is about writing in general. Yes, we're both astrologers and we've both written astrology books, but you know, anybody can find some advice from this. So the other thing I learned with my first book particularly is, don't edit as you write, just write. Would you agree?
Yes. It's a very hard thing for me to follow. I tend to be a compulsive editor, but when you've hit the groove, don't waste it.
Yeah, just keep letting the words out and think, I can come back to this, or somebody else can go through it and organize the thoughts in a more coherent matter. So when did you said, was The Inner Sky was the first published, you said, right?
Yeah, the first one published, Bantam Books, 1984.
Yeah. How did you find a publisher? That's not easy, is it, these days?
Well, that was, thereby hangs a tale, needless to say. I had befriended a woman, who client of mine, we became friends, a novelist, and she was about 10 years older than me. Even back then, I was really busy, but I just liked her, so we would have lunch together. I gave her guitar lessons. You know, we became pretty close, and I'd done a reading for her. Her next book, it was looking like Jupiter's wind was in her sails. And so I just mentioned that to her. She's in New York City talking to her literary agent, kind of a rising hot young star in the New York literary scene, mentioned this astrology reading and encouraging news about her next book. And the literary agent, much to her surprise, was really open to astrology and wanted to hear all about it. You know, she's very New York tough, but she wanted to hear us. So then the famous words, the literary agent, Melanie Jackson, her name is, she asked my friend, the novelist, can he write, referring to me? And my friend, Laurel, her name is, responded, I don't know, but he sure can talk. She shared that with me, and it's like, should be on my gravestone. And next day, I get a phone call from a literary agent in New York. I'm a hippie in North Carolina with no connections that I knew of. She wants to know if I might like to write a chapter or two of a book and an outline on spec. 6 weeks later, I had a deal with Bantam Books. That's a Uranus on the Ascendant by Transit story, by the way.
That's quite amazing. Now, my first book, I was just as lucky. So just, you know, to any budding writers or astrologers who think they want to write their book, there is often an element of luck in these things, and you have to remain open to these things. I actually got paid to write my first book, and the offer to write it, or the ask to write it, actually came in an email saying, hey, would you like to write a book for us? And I just thought, I've had all these things where you pay to write a chapter in a book. Have you heard of those things?
Vanity Press and stuff like that.
But something about this email made me kind of just answer it and say, please tell me it's not one of these things where you're asking me for money to be a published author. And they're like, oh, no, we want to pay you to write a book.
Amazing.
I could have just spammed that email, you know, if I hadn't remained open to the ideas, because I'd always wanted to write a book. So, So did you write for that same publishing company again? Didn't you start your own publishing company later?
That's a bit of a tale there too. I wrote three books for Bantam: The Inner Sky, The Changing Sky, and then with Jody, the third book, Skymates. And they all did better than Bantam expected. You know, they're serious astrology books, so they're not going to be like Madonna Tells All or anything like that. But they sold pretty well. But after about 3 years, they decided they're going to take them out of print, which they do. They actually had kind of a longer life than most mass market paper books. So I was a bit in despair there for a little while. But soon enough, ACS Publications out of San Diego, a serious astrology publisher back then, Neil Mickelson and his people, they wanted to take over those three books, which was good news for me. So I wound up writing, let's see, The Night Speaks and The Book of Pluto for them in addition. Mm-hmm. They went out of business. Meanwhile, Jody had started a self-publishing company to publish some novels that she had not been able to place anywhere. And self-publishing was just starting to take off, and she was doing pretty well with that. So I just decided I wanted to self-publish. There was a conversation with an editor that was a turning point in my life. We're coming up with a subtitle for, I think it was The Changing Sky, a new edition of that book. And I'd suggested something like enhance your life with this kind of knowledge. I forget the exact words, but the word enhance was in there. And here's the moment that changed my life. Enhance is too hard a word for our audience.
Oh my goodness.
is this the audience I want to write for? You know, And so at that point, self-publishing, I did have other options, but self-publishing, even though it has its own challenges, it gives you absolute freedom, you know, and that is so precious. Freedom to make grievous errors of judgment, you know, I might add. But I wanted to be able to use hard words like enhance.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
That makes complete sense to me. My second book is called The Complete Guide to Astrology. Uh-huh. And I absolutely hate the title, but the publishers chose it because of keywords and things. And now it has got, you know, nearly 8,000 reviews on Amazon. So it's sold very, very well for the publishers, but it doesn't kind of tell what the book's really about, to my mind, which it is about astrology, clearly. So it's got astrology in it, but...
it's not poetry.
Yeah. But yeah, I think with my fourth, when I come to do it, I'm going to self-publish because, you know, it's my baby, this last book, and mm-hmm. I want to do it my way, and I want to be able to use the titles that work for me, not just my algorithms and things. So.
The world has changed so much. I mean, there's a subject title, but specifically in publishing, like when I was young, self-publishing, I can't say it didn't exist, but it was rare. The technology wasn't there. Nobody had a computer, you know, for one thing. Mm-hmm. And so basically you were at the mercy of the big publishing houses. If you got them on your side, that was really good news. It was hard to get them on your side. And that was just the way it was. It was much tougher to publish anything in those days, actually. Now anybody with $3,000 or $4,000 can publish, you know, whatever they've got, their personal diaries or whatever, which has its catastrophic dimensions as well as its good ones. Yes. Here's one of life's little paradoxes that people lament the rise of Amazon and how it's wiped out the small bookstores in the neighborhoods. And it's a sad and true statement. You know, I miss those bookstores and they're becoming dinosaurs. On the other hand, Amazon has been wonderful for self-publishers. Like I could not have been successful in selling books without Amazon because my books are serious. So it's hard to get them into most bookstores. You know, there's a handful of serious astrology bookstores. They're not going to keep you alive. But Amazon has such outreach and little word of mouth and some lecture support. And pretty soon people are buying your books on Amazon. So Amazon giveth and Amazon taketh away. It's been good for the independent writer.
Definitely has. And regarding self-publishing, I would imagine that having experience of being published by a publisher, and I know my publisher sent me whole spreadsheets of things to do to market my book and things like that, really kind of helps you with the self-publishing. So if anybody has, you know, wants to pursue a career in publishing their own books, I would imagine it's probably gives you great experience to have a publisher pushing you. Would you agree? So you learned a lot from publishing the first books? Yeah,
definitely. I've told a couple of sad stories, but basically my experience with Bantam and with ACS was positive. You know, a biggest English language publisher at the time, Bantam, became Bantam Doubleday Dell. And then ACS was a, you know, successful, small, dedicated astrology house, basically. And they're both in both professional relationships and sincere friendships. But there's the market for serious astrology is it's tight. You know, it's hard to make a living in it. If you want to do honest work, you can do schlock and become a millionaire, actually. I mean, there are plenty of stories like that, too. But if you want to write seriously, your readership is small. But it's getting bigger. It's getting bigger because we're winning the battle for hearts and minds, and astrology is exploding, and it's just wonderful to see it.
I know. I check my Amazon statistics every day, and that second book, I can't believe it that I've got nearly 8,000 reviews. But you know, I got paid to write it, so I don't make money from it. But it's hard anyway to make books make money from astrology books, as you said. So I think it's best to see them as kind of your business card, personally.
Yeah, well said. Yeah, it's the spin-offs that actually produce the money. You know, people want to book readings with you. You're invited to a lecture.
Yeah, and occasionally you'll get people messaging you to do book signings, things like that as well.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Very rarely. That's even not such a big thing these days, is it? Doing a tour, you know?
I think that's probably becoming extinct. I haven't done one in so many years. I haven't really paid that much attention to it. I sure sign a lot of books when I'm in China, though. They've done pretty well over there, and they get these long, long lines of people. And I feel like Bono or Elvis or somebody like that when I'm over there. It's kind of a strange feeling.
If I know we said we'd talk about writing and publishing, but seeing as we're just having tea together, how did you get in so popular in China? How did you start teaching in China? I find that really interesting.
Well, in 2010, I guess it was, I got an email from a Chinese person saying they loved my work. They were writing English. They'd read Inner Sky, I guess, in English, and wanted to know if I would consider coming to Shanghai to teach a class. And it was like, here's a ticket to an interplanetary voyage. I was a little scared, but I decided I was interested. And so I went back and forth with them. You never know, there's a lot of hot air out there, but they were solid people, and they invited me, and I had probably 50 people in the class. And that led quickly to me developing a relationship with a interesting organization. They're called nodoor.com, like there is no door to the house, nodoor.com. And it's run by an American guy, an astrologer named David Raleigh, and a Chinese woman named Felicia Zhang. And they're based in Beijing, and they have millions of visitors to their website, literally millions, not metaphorical millions. Yeah. And they've become huge in China. So they've invited me. And up until COVID, I was there every year for, I think, 10 years, every October. I'll probably go back. I've been doing Zoom webinars for them since.
Yeah, I saw you'd started doing Zoom again and things. Surely now travels, although they've still got their zero COVID policy, which makes things very difficult.
Oh, yeah, China shut down. The Chinese people are going crazy from being locked up.
Yeah, I saw a news report about that yesterday, actually.
Yeah.
Well, my second book's been published, being translated into Portuguese.
Portuguese, oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah. I keep getting messages from Brazil saying, oh, I've got your book.
Wonderful. Now, is this a Portuguese publisher or a Brazilian publisher?
I don't know who translated it, actually. I should look who translated it. Maybe they'll invite me to Brazil.
Yeah. I've been talking with a Brazilian publisher. I don't know if anything will come of it. I'd like that. That's a language I've never been in.
I know. It was a complete news to me. I just started getting all these messages on Instagram with pictures of my book in Portuguese. I was like, this is fantastic.
That's wonderful. It's a good feeling. When I got the Turkish editions of my books, I think three of them are in Turkish now, and I couldn't help but read them out loud, you know, just sounding out the Turkish. Of course, I had no idea.
I should get myself a Portuguese copy, actually. That's a good idea. Yeah.
It's fun to have them.
So you've written like The Inner Sky, Changing Sky, The Night Speaks, Pluto, Neptune, The Elements.
Yeah.
What are you going to write next?
Oh, well, what I've been writing actually for the last 4 years is this cell phone app, Leela, big project that I've been working on. And I've lost track, but I've probably written the equivalent of a couple of books, you know, just for text. And it's the technical side of it is not my cup of tea. I've got other people doing that, fortunately. But it's getting, you know, people can look at it now for free, a kind of simple version of it. But I think by the coming year, probably early in the year, we'll launch a, you know, full scale version, a paid version. My fingers are crossed, you know.
Yeah, I remember reading you talking about that a while back. You're doing that with Ricky?
Yeah, Ricky Williams. You know, it's a strangest situation. Ricky is a dear, dear friend of mine now. And who would have guessed? You know, a lot of astrologers are not football fans, National Football League fans.
I had no idea who he was.
Me either. I had no idea who Ricky was either. I haven't watched a football game for many years, and maybe 10 games in the last 20 years. I get hooked when I'm watching, but it's like I just don't have time for it. So Ricky comes up to me out of the crowd at Norwalk and introduces himself, and he's a gigantic, fierce-looking guy with a sweetheart. He's a Cancer Moon, you know, and he's studying Chinese medicine. And I've never, honestly, never had a student get to professional level functionality as an evolutionary astrologer faster than Ricky. You know, he just got it in his bones. It must be karmic. And he followed me all over the world, you know, because he had a fair amount of money from his football career. And so I remember sitting in a little boondocks airport in southern Italy. I just finished teaching a class in a place called Tropea. And Ricky had attended the class, and we were sitting there. There's no seats in the airport, and with our suitcases, we're going to fly to Rome and then back to the States. And so I said to Ricky, you know, I think I must be suffering from a prejudice here. I'm just so shocked that, you know, a football player would be interested in astrology. So, like, how many of your teammates, you know, or, you know, colleagues in that field were into astrology? And Ricky says, zero.
He's retired, right, from football.
Oh yeah, many years ago. He's in his early 40s now, and. It's another funny Ricky story. He was busted a few times in his football career for, you know, testing positive for having smoked marijuana and, you know, dreadlocks and, you know, just the whole nine yards of being a football guy. And what happened is he didn't change at all, but the culture pivoted around him. And now he's a respectable cannabis entrepreneur.
He's a really nice guy too. Stephen and I both went to the ESAR conference in Colorado a few weeks ago, and I was in one of Stephen's talks, and Ricky and his wife flew in just for that talk, right?
It was impressive.
Yeah, and they're a lovely couple.
There's a little synchronicity. They had a baby I guess 2 years ago, more or less, and the baby's first name is Sol, like the sun, S-O-L, and his middle name is Forrest, like mine. So everybody, of course, assumes he was named after me, but actually it's pure synchronicity. Linnea's mother had picked out the name. And I've never met her and don't know her. So it was it's just one of those things that puts a smile on your face.
It is, yeah. All these synchronicities, amazing world, honestly.
Yeah.
Another thing that you are, well, it's well launched now, but the Forest Center for Evolutionary Astrology.
Thank you for asking. Yeah, that's probably the project that's closest to my heart right now. It's I want to build essentially a legacy. This kind of astrology, evolutionary astrology, that I put my signature on. I've contributed a lot. I don't claim to have originated it. A lot of people have talked about reincarnation and psychology and astrology, and that's essentially what it is, bringing those three fields together. And there's lots of ways to do that. But my technique is real effective. You know, I've got clients out the wazoo, and people are helped by it. And I'm getting older, obviously, and I want to pass it on. And I want people who are seriously trained. I had my apprenticeship program for 20 years, and that was quite successful. 2,000 or 3,000 people were touched by it, and many are professionals now. But there were no tests or anything, so You know, people get a certificate for attendance, essentially, but they didn't have to prove anything. The FCEA, FAR Center for Evolutionary Astrology, is we want people to pass the tests, but they got to pass the tests. Yeah, we'll help them out in every way we can. And it starts at zero, and we'll take you to astrological mastery. We're just short of our second anniversary now. We got a couple of hundred students and a bunch of tutors. Ricky's actually one of our tutors. You know, he wanted to be. I was really delighted at that. And Katie Kadge, a professor of art at De Anza University here in California, you know her well. You know, she's our dean. And so it's a happy family. It's a lot of work. It's successful so far.
I wish you'd had that running when I started out, because my main teacher was actually one of Stephen's first apprentices, Maridel Bowes.
Oh, she's great.
Yeah. So I knew Maridel, and when I decided that I wanted to, I'd studied astrology for many years, self-taught, just as a hobby, just practicing on friends, you know, as people do. And I knew Maridel through my social media coaching, actually, which I did before this. And then I emailed Maridel and said, I've decided I want to pursue astrology professionally. Can you recommend a teacher? She was like, how about me? So I studied one-on-one with Maridel for 2 years.
One-on-one. Oh, fantastic. Yeah, that's a great way to learn. She's in Mexico, last I heard. Have you stayed in touch with her?
Yeah, we're still in touch. Yeah, she's moved to Mexico, and she gave up astrology for a while, but she's back taking clients again now, I think. So I am definitely kind of trained in your work, because she practices just what you teach. So I kind of got the Forest Center for Evolutionary Astrology a different way. So.
I love hearing stories like that. You just never know the 6 degrees of separation, and you know, you do a reading for somebody, and they tell somebody, and they tell somebody, and, you know, pretty soon the Pope has heard about it, and, you know, the president of Bulgaria.
I've got a whole folder on my computer as well of forest classes, it says, or forest courses. I think some of your webinars and things I've bought, the Three Faces of Love and things like that. You know, Stephen's an amazing teacher, and I must say, you know, I've got several of your books, like, who hasn't? And but this one is just near by my side at all times, even though, you know, I'm kind of way beyond kind of the beginner thing. Just some of the techniques that you teach in this, like just the simple way to kind of find the focalizer and how to step by step look at what's in the chart. Just, it's one of the, well, to my mind, it's probably the best astrology for beginners, even better than my own.
I think you just win the saintliness award. You know? It's, as soon as you put it up there, it reminded me of a story, you know, the Inner Sky title of my first book. As your unfortunate title that was thrust upon you, you know, the complete guide to astrology. And this one, my editor at Bantam really wanted to call The Inner Sky Astrology 101. And that was my reaction. But that was kind of the working title in the corporation. Yeah. And, you know, he and I had a good rapport. I didn't like it, but, you know, I understand, you know, you guys are putting the money up and all that. And so we're just jamming on the phone. And the Inner Sky entered my mind, like literally in a phone call. It just appeared. And I said, The Inner Sky. And my editor, Peter Gazzardi, his name was, this is such a corporate publishing moment. He's a great guy, but he's The Inner Sky. That's it. The Inner Sky. It sounds like Inner Tennis, which was a bestseller at that time.
I've never heard of Inner Tennis.
So if it sounds like something that's a bestseller, then we'll go ahead and use it. So I was saved by Inner Tennis.
Thank heavens. Oh, I'm so glad it wasn't called Astrology 101.
Yeah. I've got all these memories from the 80s coming back. Now, here's another little tidbit. You may be the first person in the universe to ever hear this. Peter Guzzardi had to finish editing a book before he could edit my book. So, of course, I was delayed a few months. And the book he was editing before mine was Stephen Hawking's book, A Brief History of Time, one of the classic books in physics. Yeah. And so he did that one, and then he did The Inner Sky. There's some kind of synchronicity there.
Oh, there definitely is. Yeah. It's like, wow. That's... So you're always busy. You're doing the Forest Center for Evolutionary Astrology. You're always writing. You're always things. What else for you? Do you still do readings? Do you still do?
Yeah, I do. I do four readings per week now.
Wow.
Yeah, I stopped taking on new clients a couple of years ago. I realized I had these other projects going. I was not going to be able to do quite as many readings, and I started doing the math, you know, sort of got brave and faced how long my lists were. And they were like live readings, recorded readings, 8 and 10 years long. It would take me that long. And I just knew I that was not reasonable. And so I have an ambition to keep all the promises I've made, but I've stopped adding anybody new to the lists. But I'm still quite active as a counseling astrologer.
Yeah, yeah. Four a week, that's quite a lot to my mind.
It's down from nine or 10. It was 9 or 10 for many years.
Wow.
And they're long.
Especially, I think, in counseling astrology, it goes so deep, it kind of takes quite a lot out of me, myself, anyway, personally.
Yeah, it's tiring, but it's so rewarding, you know, to make a difference in somebody's life. I have a curse of Scorpio South Node, so I'm good at curses, and a curse for my worst enemies. And it's, may you, feel free to use this yourself if you like, may you have a job that pays you only money.
Oh, very good.
That's Scorpio.
Stephen is brilliant at these little phrases. So, actually, tell me if this was one of yours. It's a phrase I use all the time, and I'm pretty sure I got it from Maridel, my teacher, and I'm pretty sure it came from you, about Pluto, that Pluto takes away what you thought was your power and leaves you with what is truly your power.
Now that's Maridel, as near as that. And she stole it somewhere else. Yeah, and I'm going to steal it and make it my own.
Yeah,
that's a good one.
I think it's brilliant. But
that really
I have to tell you, you know, you have this art, I think, of telling stories as you look at the astrology. I was lucky enough to go to a weekend workshop with Stephen when I was just starting out as a professional astrologer, and we each got a reading in that weekend. And I was going through a really long Saturn transit period because I have a Sagittarius stellium, and Saturn was about to go over all my Sagittarius things. And that's all you talked about for the whole time, just telling stories. And I remember you saying, you know, this is time for your great work. And with Saturn, if there's that thing that you're going to get to your deathbed and go, I should have done that, then that's the thing to do. Yeah. And during that long Saturn period, I'd always wanted to write a book. And I was like, I had Stephen's words in my ear when this publisher came and I wrote my first book. And even when I found it really hard on the hardest days to write my first book, I was like, you'll regret it if you don't do this.
Exactly. One of my buzz phrases with Saturn, it's quite pertinent to your story there, is Saturn always gives you a choice, and the choice is between being depressed or being exhausted. Which would you prefer? And it sounds like a rotten choice, but anybody's going to think about it for 2 seconds and say, give me exhausted. It's better than depressed. And then you get into the process of getting exhausted and you find it's very engaging. You know, you just feel so alive. Another story, you've got me going here, you know, it's trying to explain Saturn to people. It's like you've got to clean the damned house. You know, your dignity as a human being depends. This weekend, definitely going to clean the house. Come Saturday, I'm definitely going to clean the house on Sunday. You know, putting it off. And then Sunday, feeling like Christ crucified, you get out the vacuum cleaner and then here's where it gets interesting. You clean the house, you're totally engaged with the process, not officially happy, but totally engaged. And then here's the crux. You're finished. You sit down, proud of yourself, you know, I've cleaned the house. And you think of one more thing. There's one more thing that everybody does it because it's hard to stop. Once you get started, it's hard to stop. And I'm a living, breathing illustration of that. I'm a Capricorn with Saturn and Virgo on my midheaven. And so, you know, I got started when I was a kid and I haven't stopped yet.
Actually, I think there's another book for you. You haven't done the Book of Saturn yet, have you?
You know, it's tempting. And the Book of Uranus has been in my mind as well. But the Elements books essentially cover that same kind of territory. You know, between the four of them, they're really long, almost a couple of thousand pages long. And it's like the Book of Earth, for example, is not just about the element Earth. It's about the three Earth signs and the planets that rule them. So there's a lot about Saturn in the Book of Earth, for example, a lot about Mercury in it and Venus. Yeah. In it. And so there are, and the corresponding houses, you know, to those signs. And so I set out to write down everything I knew about astrology. You know, that was kind of the goal. I knew I couldn't do that, but I wanted to approximate it. And that's what the Four Elements books are about.
I must actually read them. I haven't actually read those books yet because I've got...
Well, yeah, it'll take you a while. They're fast.
And I've got a big pile of unread books already.
Well, this would make the pile taller. There's an interesting synchronicity. This just amazed me. This will be a little tedious. Give me 90 seconds of tedious and then it will get interesting, I promise. So in my system, teaching astrology, I always encourage people to start out with the sun, moon, and ascendant, the primal triad. Get that blend right, figure out how that's working, and everything else is going to fall into place. Sun, moon, and ascendant, 12 possibilities for each one. They operate independently. So there are 1,728 possible combinations of sun, moon, and ascendant, 1,728. Wow. So it's a pretty granular system. Okay, that's the tedious part. Here's the cool part. I finished writing these books, had them published, sent them away. People chose font sizes and, you know, all of that. And I was curious how many pages long they were. I've said a couple of thousand pages. I actually totaled them all up. Mm-hmm. The Four Elements books are 1,728 pages long.
Wow.
The same number as 12 times 12 times 12 for sun, moon, and ascendant. Isn't that mind-boggling? I had nothing to do with it. That's
another synchronicity. Yeah. Exactly. The numbers astound me like that, actually. Yes. I get lots of these synchronicities in my own life. And that's why I like following tracking degrees as well, because I track kind of where planets are at the all times and eclipses on degrees. I go, oh, I remember that degree was.
This one has a stick of dynamite hidden under it, you know.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So to everybody listening, there's going to be a link in the show notes to, I've got an Amazon shop thing. So there's some links to Stephen's books, but you know, if this one, you can't be starting with this one, if you're starting out with astrology. And speaking about the primary triad, that's probably my favorite bit of your book in this, where you do, you know, the little layout of whether it's the sun, the rising and the moon. And I can't find the page for it now, but here we go. The table of archetypes. Yes. So So I love it where you go there. So the sun sign is who the person is, and the moon describes the soul, and then the ascendant symbolizes the mask behind which they hide and through which they express themselves. I've changed it to they because you were talking about a man in this, but
it works. We're using it a lot in Leela, this cell phone app that I'm building. It's a really effective system because if you think of somebody's sun, moon, and ascendant, and you start saying, so they're Aquarius with a Cancer moon and Sagittarius rising just arbitrarily, and you start describing that, and pretty soon a client's eyes are going around in their head because, you know, Aquarius is complicated, Cancer is complicated, sun is complicated, moon is complicated. There's so much to say, and you kind of need to say it, but to give the person a handle on all of that really quickly, you know, so they can just feel it. And so for each sign, there would be a bunch of archetypes, and I encourage people to decide which one resonates with them. But Aquarius with a Cancer moon and Sagittarius rising, you're the rebel with the soul of the healer wearing the mask of the gypsy.
Yeah.
Immediately somebody says, oh my God, you know, it's like there's one sentence that compresses a lot of astrological information in an integrated way, and it speaks to the heart. So I'm excited about that technique. It works well.
Yeah, it really does. So if anybody can guess, I'm a gypsy with the soul of a teacher, and my mask, or I express myself as a philosopher. So
say the last one. I missed the last
philosopher.
Philosopher. Aha. Yeah, great. So we had two Sagittarius pieces in there. Yeah.
Each one. I'm Sagittarius, Sagittarius rising and Gemini moon.
And the Gemini moon. Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah.
What an adventure you've been having.
Exactly. Because I've lived in four countries and several states and several places. So I'm definitely a Sagittarius traveler. So it just works, this system, and it's going to be on the app, and it's also in this book on page 220.
Gypsy is such a great word for Sagittarius. It's so evocative, especially here in North America, where there aren't really Roma people, you know, so we don't have the interaction with the actual gypsy culture, but the sort of gypsy of folklore in North America, just a beautiful symbol. A couple of times people have accused me of insensitivity for saying the word gypsy. I mean, you can't win nowadays a lot. I certainly don't intend it in a way that's insulting to the Roma people. In fact, it's kind of a positive romantic idea, you know, gypsy as we hear it, but
it is,
I mean, I guess our language,
it is wet because Sagittarius, they're what we're wanderers, we like freedom, which is very Roman. I think
exactly.
So there's definitely negative intent in there.
Nothing intended. And with Sagittarius rising, you know, you can you could dance with a rose between your teeth around a fire. And of course, anybody doing that looks ridiculous, but there's some people who shouldn't even attempt it.
Yes.
You could do it. You know, I can see just from your affect, your ascendant, you know, you could pull it off and people be clapping their hands for you.
Yes.
It evokes a lot as a style.
It does. And I've maybe done things like that in my past even.
Let us pray, right?
So we're nearly at the end of the hour now, but I have to laugh because there's one thing Stephen and I kind of disagree on, so I'd love to kind of talk about it a little bit, and he probably remembers what it is. Maybe it's the true or mean nodes calculation. Stephen uses the mean nodes, I use the true nodes, and my nodes change signs between the two. So, so I feel like a true North Node Libra, and in Stephen's system, I would be a true North Node Virgo. Tell me why you like the mean node.
Well, the reason I like the mean node rather than the true node is over. I'm never a Nazi about this kind of stuff. I'll kill you if you use a different house system. That, I mean, it's like, no. But over years and years and years of experience, running into the tiny minority of human beings such as yourself, where it toggles between one sign or another, true or mean, I've found the mean story to make sense a lot more reliably than the true story, the true node story. I would not want to try to force my beliefs upon you. You know, there's so much of that in the astral world, you know, everybody making everybody else wrong. And I have no patience.
I don't like that either. So.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's a plague. But here's how I would interpret your chart. And again, this is with me not really knowing your whole chart, but just with a Pisces south node and a Virgo north node, that in prior lifetimes, you've experienced certain mystical and spiritual initiations and experiences sometimes of loss that supported that development of that spirituality. And now you've come to a time where it's appropriate for you to be, and this is Virgo, North Node, serving others with it. Come down from the mountaintop and come to the village and teach us what you know. Get yourself out of the way. Stop gazing at your navel and start gazing at everybody else's navel and see if you can help them out. That would be the Pisces to Virgo transition.
You know, I can see that. And what is it possible? I have to laugh, though, that when we kind of joked about this at ESOP, Stephen just looked at me and said, well, you're wrong. But he was joking, I know, because he's not like that. Right. Is it possible that for somebody like me, where it's 0 Libra or 29 Virgo, speaking about the North Node, that both could apply?
Yeah, I'd have no trouble with that. I mean, I'd have no trouble with that, period. A chart is like a dream or a poem. It's not like a newspaper that we read. And you have a dream and somebody reads it one way and it's helpful, and somebody reads that same dream in another way and it's helpful too. And I don't want to be the kind of person who has a problem with that. You know, I want life to be as complex. I want to let life be as complex as it is. So different systems, sure. I've seen people attempt the noble great work of integrating, for example, Vedic astrology with Western astrology. Seems like a splendid idea. It usually comes out as kind of a mishmash, as near as I can tell. I don't want to insult anybody, but I sat with a great Tibetan teacher once, Kenpo Karthar Rinpoche. This is actually quite relevant. I had a private interview with him, and the idea was you bring a question. And my question was, I'm an astrologer in a culturally diverse society. I have to speak the language of many different religions. And I found that they all seem to make sense, but I've had a hard time committing to a single path of my own. And my expectation, I'm like 30 years old, was he's going to say, well, Steve, that's wonderful. You're on your way to enlightenment. But no, he said, you can't ride two horses with one ass. And he sort of went on to commend the openness to all the religions, but his point was pick one. And I kind of have that attitude practically when I'm a student wants to pull together many different traditions or work with the mean and the true node at the same time. Yeah. It may be true, but you're probably not smart enough to do it. I know I'm not, you know, maybe angels are. Maybe it's like J.K. Rowling in Harry Potter when she dismissed astrology, but she said the centaurs were wise enough to understand it.
Right. Yeah, I probably wouldn't do it in the client reading. If I read for somebody like me whose nodes change signs, I would pick one and use that, and
Yeah.
think they'd get the right message. But
Yeah.
it just intrigues me because I know there's a few people like me out there where it changes signs, so it's
Yeah. Yeah. And you had to work with what helps you, what speaks to you. I mean, that's always really the ultimate bottom line.
Yeah, and then we've got to put the houses in anyway, and the rest of the chart, because you've got to look
Oh,
at the whole chart really anyway.
which house system to use, and on and on and on. Do we use the trans-Neptunians? What about the asteroids? It's astrology is it's a big tent, and we all have to get along.
Exactly, and some people don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, I think always work. I always like that. So. Yeah, always work in different ways, you know. Whole sign system works for some things, and I use Porphyry because I started with a teacher who used Porphyry before I met Maridel, and she used Placidus house.
That's what I do. I use Placidus, but
Yeah. Yeah, they're very similar anyway, so. Well, anyway, Stephen, it's been such a pleasure having you
Oh,
here,
I've
is there?
enjoyed it a lot, Louise. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Is there any kind of last words you'd like to give people about, if particularly thinking of writing, seeing as my interview series seems to be with astrological authors? So, any advice we can give anybody last minute?
It's hard, but it's worth it. I guess
Yeah.
that would be it.
I would agree.
Yeah.
So, again, reminder that I've got a link to some of Stephen's books below. I'll also link to Stephen's website and to the School of Evolutionary Astrology, the Center for Evolutionary Astrology, sorry. I do teach astrology myself, but actually it's not my favorite thing to do. So if you want a really good grounding in astrology, I would send you to Stephen's center, to be honest. So.
Thank you so much for saying
You're
that.
very welcome. Okay. Well, thank you, Stephen,
Yes.
and we'll see you
Bye-bye.
all next time.
Yeah, bye-bye.